For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics, along with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Oklahoma prison system is facing a dire future, according to the head of the Department of Corrections. Director Joe Albaugh says state facilities are currently at 109% capacity, and if they were to take in people currently in county jails or private prisons, that would jump to 149%. And now Albaugh blames lawmakers for not passing major corrections reform nor funding DOC at adequate levels. Neva, does Albaugh have a point here?
I think absolutely, and we've talked about it now for months and months, and certainly Director Albaugh has talked about it almost from the moment he hit the ground with the DOC. And when you look at it, this 58-page report, 2 hours, the full board there, I mean, the theme that was absolutely through everything that was said is that we have a big problem. In fact, Joe Albaugh went so far as to say people are going to die, the clock is ticking. I mean, that's a fairly harsh assessment coming from the man at the top of the at the helm. So I think that this is something where lawmakers and everyone involved are going to really have to get serious and come to the table. I mean, we're long past just talking statistics that the public has almost tuned out of. I mean, we've heard for so long the overcrowding. We've heard the fact that it's a bad environment. It's not safe for the folks working there. It's not safe for the people that are the inmates there. I mean, it's a totally abhorrent situation, and it's going to take some real leadership. And I think the fact that it's going to take an infusion of literally probably $1 billion or more to begin to address some of the problems in terms of facilities and the overall issues at hand is something that people are going to have to decide, are we going to pay for it or are we not?
Ryan.
Well, and the $1 billion is just a start.
That's right.
You know, that doesn't even get us to where we ought to be if we wanted a system that we could say, this is a system that actually lives up to its name of Department of Corrections. That is just an absurd and a disgusting abuse of the term corrections at this point. It should be called the Department of Dehumanization, because that's what we're doing. We're putting people in dehumanizing conditions, inmates in particular, but even the corrections officers that are working there. They're working there under violent and difficult conditions. It's a violent atmosphere for everyone in those facilities. Director Albaugh, I think that what you're seeing right now is the beginning of a campaign from him. He's been a vocal leader in trying to get the legislature to adopt new criminal justice reform policies, to invest in our prison system the way that it ought to be invested. And he's been there already, but I think that you're going to see that increase considerably over the next several months. And I say that not because I know anything in particular, but because you don't hold a meeting like this and say things like the governor should call this back into special session if you don't see him really stepping out and taking a new leadership role here. This is really a system right now that is built on greed and cowardice. And, you know, thankfully we've got somebody like Director Albaugh. We've got coalitions around the state that represent everyone from across the ideological and political spectrum saying things have got to change. We really, not only do we need to invest $1 billion, not only do we need to reconsider the governor's criminal justice task force bills, but we've got so many other things. We have to really reconsider the entire system at this point.
And I think when you look at it, I mean, it's not just the dollars, it's the philosophy of where are we as a state? I mean, when we continue to say that over the next 10 years we have to build, I mean, just based on the numbers, we're going to need at least 3 more prisons. I mean, philosophically, where are the people of Oklahoma on this issue? I mean, it's no longer just lawmakers deciding what the budget appropriation is going to be. It's the big picture long term of, if we don't start fixing this, we're going to have such a problem that the ramifications in terms of bringing jobs and industry to the state, I mean, the spill off of this is tremendous. And it's now, I think, where Director Albaugh and frankly this board have been courageous to step forward and start to speak very forcefully about the issue and call it straight out in front of the public so that they have to pay attention to it.
And you'd mentioned about it being dangerous for the inmates and for the people who work there. These prisons are also in small communities, which are also in danger if something major were to happen, a riot, prison break, something like that.
Well, and if you put people in dehumanizing conditions, we shouldn't be surprised whenever violence is the result. And the fact that we haven't had a, I mean, I, 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 I'm reluctant to say that we haven't had a major incident because we've had people die in our prisons. And every time somebody dies there, it's a major incident. But I'm talking about the cataclysmic event where you have multiple deaths on a single day or over a series of days. This, we have to ask ourselves, what is the purpose of our prison system? Why is it that we take this extraordinary step as a society to remove mothers and fathers from their children, to take people out of their communities and put them in a place where they get inadequate health care? We give them inadequate food, and we say that mental health patients don't get the treatment and the medicine that they need. Why are we doing this? And I think that it's just this, again, it's there are profit motives up and down the system for people that are making money out of it. And then there's just a lot of cowardice on the part of legislators who see the system and see the status quo as this immovable universal law of nature. And it's just not. We have to reassess it. We've got to do something soon. I'm so glad that Director Albaugh is taking charge on this.
And I think what we're seeing is the tough on crime is becoming smart on crime in terms of the rhetoric, in terms of the real thinking about how we address these problems. And it's something that's not going to go away. I mean, it's exactly where we are on education. It's exactly where we are on public safety and corrections. We're facing these issues and saying we have this monumental problem, but we're not willing to have the political courage and muscle to put not only money behind it, but a long-term solution that really identifies these problems and does something to correct them.
And we're allowing a very small but vocal group of individuals.
With money.
With money and with perceived, and I use that word very strongly, perceived political power. And there I'm very frankly talking about district attorneys. They use their perceived political power at the legislature to maintain an indefensible status quo.
Starting tomorrow, it will cost more to buy a vehicle in Oklahoma unless car dealerships can stop an increase on motor vehicles passed by lawmakers. They've filed a lawsuit challenging the measure to impose an extra 1.25% tax on purchases. Ryan, do they have a case here?
I think that they've got a slam dunk, or as close to one as there is in a case that could end up before the state's highest court. You know, this is every lawmaker that stood up on the they should give Nostradamus awards because Jason Dunnington, Emily Virgin, Scott Inman, the number of legislators who stood up and said this will happen if you pass the budget the way that you're passing it, is just through the roof. You had Republicans and Democrats saying that everybody saw this coming. We're either going to be in a situation where the Supreme Court invalidates not only the new sales tax or fee, or the removal of the exemption, the art of words here. Everybody used to make fun of President Clinton for, what's the definition of is, Well, semantics matter. And this, you can't just talk your way out of this deal. And that's what they've tried to do by passing fees and the removal of exemptions and then saying, well, it's not a tax. Well, it is a tax. You've been calling it a tax all session long. We're going to be in a situation where a special session is going to be necessary. The governor's going to call one. And then it's going to be up to the legislative leaders as to whether they show back up at the Capitol or they allow across-the-board cuts to decimate state agencies.
Neva.
I agree with Ryan in terms of the assessment. I mean, it's exactly where we're at. Mm-hmm. It's no surprise to most folks that have followed it with any degree of watching what evolved not only in the closing stretch of the legislative session, but now the fact that everyone telegraphed their punch that they were going to go to the Supreme Court and ask for this to really be remedied. So we'll see what the court says next month, but it certainly sets up for a very difficult position this fall when conceivably, like you say, Ryan, the legislature may well be called back into session.
And meanwhile, gubernatorial candidate Gary Richardson also challenging the motor vehicle tax, but also the bill to impose a $100 fee on electric vehicles and a $30 fee on hybrids, as well as the measure capping the standard deduction on state income tax. And even this is Richardson grabbing headlines, or is really got a case here as well?
Well, I mean, I think you have to say it's a little bit of both. I mean, clearly he's a gubernatorial candidate, so it certainly ups his profile and ups the the situation for an upcoming primary season where he is setting a dynamic where a lot of these other folks are going to have to weigh in and have an opinion. And it is going to be something that from the voters' standpoint, they're going to want to talk about and hear some specifics. So it's one of those kind of climates being set where no one's going to be able to fully dodge these issues, I mean, long term. And I think it does make for some interesting slippery slopes for some of these candidates who historically would like to just kind of punt this and say, well, we're we're going to wait and see what the court has to say. Now you've got a candidate who is also an attorney, who is also someone who has not been bashful to get in these kind of political skirmishes that is kind of up in the ante across the board.
Ryan.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's trying to position himself as the outsider within the Republican primary. I think a lot of Oklahomans see the budget that was passed as irresponsible. I think a lot of legal observers look at the budget that was passed as unconstitutional. And so I think he's got a case, you know, similar to the other cases that have been filed. Frankly, I think the more cases that land in front of the Supreme Court, the easier it becomes for the court to say, listen, this isn't just one group out here. This isn't one fringe group or one ideological organization. We're getting folks from all over the board bringing this to us. And I think that that makes the case more powerful. And he's going to be running against the Republican establishment, very similar to the way that Donald Trump ran against the Republican establishment in his primary contest around the country. And so he's going to say the Republicans in the legislature and even the Republican governor, perhaps, he may even decide that it's worthwhile to run against Mary Fallon, even though she won't be on the ballot, to say they've been irresponsible with the brand of the Republican Party. I'm going to take it back. And that's, that we've seen that playbook at a national level. Interestingly enough, he's brought on Stan Ward as the attorney to help prosecute a couple of these, to prosecute these cases on his behalf. Stan Ward, largely responsible for State Question 640, put all of this stuff together, or put our current, the current limitations on our ability to raise taxes in the state of Oklahoma together, that got us in this mess. He's brought him together now to undo the budget bill, which probably ought to be undone. But frankly, so should State Question 640.
And again, it points to state questions and how serious they are. I mean, the public ultimately gets to decide these questions, and we continue to see these big issues that finally get put on the ballot for the public to decide, as opposed to lawmakers and folks that have been given the responsibility to take care of some of the people's business. And when it gets too difficult, it gets too combative among those forces, then all of a sudden it's up to the voters to decide. And I think that's where we're headed again. I think we'll see, out of all of this, I think we'll see state questions emerge that will again put it on the, put it on the backs of the Oklahoma voter to decide, we're going to have to do, we're going to have to take care of and address this problem ourselves.
You mentioned about the fact that he's already bringing up policy issues. How it's kind of nice. He's thrown down the gauntlet that we're going to be talking policy and specifics as we head into a primary, rather than a lot of times it's about just
hyperbole.
And this is actually something he can go to Todd Lamb and he can go to others and say, okay, what are you doing about this?
I think it does set the stage for a very interesting political season where people are going to want to talk about criminal justice reform. They are going to want to talk about, what are we really going to do about education? They're going to want to talk about, do we modernize and reform the tax system that is so archaic? I mean, some of these issues that kind of bubble up during the session, people say, oh, yes, we need to address this, but then they crater when you try to get some sort of a deal, when you try to get some sort of a group to come together and do the ultimate, nasty C word, compromise, and come up with something that everyone can live with, even though it might be, something less than everyone would like. And so I think it's long overdue, and I think you're right in terms of, from a national perspective, I think that, are we going to see people fighting, are the outsiders going to try to, take on the establishment? Is it going to be that kind of a climate for Republicans or Democrats as they try to determine who their nominees are going to be? It's going to be fascinating to see.
Ryan, is there something the Democrats can take advantage of here?
Well, I mean, this entire legislative session, they can take advantage of. The last 8 years of Republican leadership, they can take advantage of. The point is, are they going to be able to do that in this campaign? I mean, we've seen in a couple of special elections, they didn't have, they couldn't quite get across the finish line in my old House district. They got very close, but they elected somebody down there who was essentially a rubber stamp on this budget that's now in crisis. And so I think it's going to be really up to the Democrats if they're going to drive this message home. They're going to have to present a real alternative to Oklahoma voters. I think for too many statewide elections now, we've watched statewide Democratic candidates do everything they can to mitigate their being affiliated with the Democratic Party. and try to make themselves look like Republicans, and they want to try to out Jesus and out gun and out pro life the Republican candidates. They're not going to be successful at that. That's just not going to be the ticket to them winning these statewide offices. They're going to have to present real alternatives and appeal to growing progressive bases in metropolitan areas.
And beyond that, they have got to get more participation. I mean, we have a miserable percentage of Oklahomans who go to the polls. When we talk about primaries, it's even worse. Mm-hmm. Special elections, it's almost non-existent, whether you're Republican or Democrat. So I think that's really going to be, are we reaching a point where people finally, kind of wake up and say, yeah, I've got to really pay attention to this and actually put something behind just my talk and actually go to the polls and make a statement by voting for someone, or in some cases it may be that they're voting against someone.
Turn off Facebook and go vote. I think that's basically
as a liberal and as a progressive, I don't have any illusion that that my team wins all the campaigns across the state. But as my friend David Glover will say, if our friends show up to vote, if they actually show up to vote, there are enough of us in enough numbers and especially concentrated in enough districts that we could begin to turn some of these places in the state of Oklahoma that are, may seem just totally out of reach right now for Democratic candidates, especially progressive and liberal candidates. But that's just not the case. If they show up, we start to win these races.
Yeah. Now, Oklahoma City Councilman Ed Shadid and education advocates are circulating petitions to call for a vote to create a 0.25% citywide income tax to provide extra funding for schools in the metropolitan area. Ryan, I guess my question to you is, why not make this a statewide initiative?
Well, I think that you're talking about the difference between thousands of dollars and millions of dollars in running a campaign, getting the signatures. I think that you could probably make the case at a statewide level, but you've got the ability with a smaller voter turnout, the state question to raise sales tax for education, it passed in Oklahoma County. I mean, or it had greater numbers in Oklahoma County and more precincts here. So you've already got the kind of favorability among the electorate. And so I think it's something that as the city council refused to consider education in their latest bond and MAPS extension tax proposal that'll be on the ballot later this year, that this was the Hail Mary that Oklahoma City Public Schools needed. And, is it the perfect solution? Of course not. And I think that everybody from Ed Shadid to Paula Lewis, the board president of Oklahoma City Public Schools, other folks that have been at these meetings and these press conferences for this, they'll all tell you this is not the perfect solution. This is not where they want to be, but they're in crisis mode right now. They're hemorrhaging teachers and their students are suffering as a result, and they've got to do something. What happens after this is, if Oklahoma City passes this, do other communities have to do this as well, or does it entirely let the legislature off the hook? I hope not. But right now, I think that the primary concern is, what are we doing for our kids here?
Neither. Well, and it's not unprecedented. Back in 2015, Pottawatomie County voters, they approved a 0.495, I think it was, sales tax to support their 14 school districts through building and technology needs, and also to fund construction on a justice center at the time. But so I think when you put it squarely to the voters that have the kids in those schools, have the concerns, then it's definitely a possibility. I think Ryan's right. I mean, if you're talking about getting 12,000 valid signatures and getting something on the ballot versus doing something statewide, I mean, it's apples and oranges in terms of the mountain to climb. But I think it's also about if you can make the case that your schools are in crisis, if you can make the case that in this instance we want to pay teacher bonuses, we want to reduce classroom size, and you can get the folks that have those kids in those schools to buy into that plan, then you're going to see a really viable election start to gin up. And I think we're going to see more of this at the local level as people are paying more and more attention to what's impacting them personally, as opposed to this big picture of what it does for everyone in 77 counties.
And Ward 5's David Walters, I think, actually brought this up during city council meeting. And I don't know, I'd have to do a little bit more research on it, but I understand that if Oklahoma City were to raise more money to pay for its schools, then there's a funding issue where the state can go, oh, well, then you've got more money, so now we can give your money to another community. See, is there concern about that?
Yeah, I think that there is, that's the equalization formula that you're talking about. Yeah, from what I have heard from folks that have vetted this issue is that the way that they're planning on using the money in Oklahoma City public schools would not take away from their state funding. So it wouldn't be, we're going to pass a sales tax and put $25 million into Oklahoma City public schools, and then the state of Oklahoma would remove $25 million. I think that there's pretty good consensus that around the idea that it would be a net positive in terms of funding for Oklahoma City public schools. A couple of things, Neva was talking about the apples and oranges of a statewide versus a municipal ballot campaign. Polling numbers right now, Oklahoma City voters, likely voters, and on a question like this, very good. I've seen some of the top line numbers, and they're strong, as strong as you would want to walk into a ballot question. And then the second part of that, Neva is absolutely right. More and more of this action is going to take place at the local level. I think that people are realizing that whether it's through a local initiatives or their local county commissioners or their city councils, it's a heck of a lot easier to get majority out of a handful of people than over 100 people at the state capitol, where everybody there is entrenched in what has become a microcosm of national politics.
Oklahoma is celebrating the 100th year of the state capitol. State officials are planning a time capsule to reach out to people in 2117. Okay, Neva, let's start with you. What would your message be to people in 100 years?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. Well, I think that hopefully it would be one of optimism. I think even with the backdrop of all of the problems and all of the difficulties that we continue to be challenged and faced with, I think our history as a people who have that pioneering, independent spirit, I think will resonate, not only for the time now, but hopefully for 100 years to come.
Ryan.
I hope the robots haven't taken over. it won't be robots. It'll be nanobots. We won't see them.
And when they put that 46 up in front of the Capitol like they've had for 2 weeks, hopefully we'll have kids that have been educated enough in Oklahoma history that they'll have some sense of what that 46 is really all about.
Yeah. Lots of glib. I hope you can read this. I'm sorry. We're sorry. We're certainly not setting the next 100 years up in a very good way at the current moment. Even so much so that our current time capsule won't go into its actual home for another 2 years because it's not ready. It's under construction.
Yes.
So it's really going to be a centennial and 2 year old time capsule.
But I do
point.
Applaud the fact that we are making strides to do what is necessary to preserve the People's Building, as it was called back in 1915, when they talked about all of this and put the cornerstone in. I mean, I think that that's one of those classic examples where there was a lot of pushback. There was a lot of, give and take. But at the end of all of that, you do the right thing, and you do the right thing looking toward the bigger picture of the future, not just the difficulty that it may be in terms of dollars or pressure on the now. So hopefully we'll adopt that on some of these big questions that we've talked about today and get some good results.
And when you look at 100 years, if you look, yes, things are not always going that well politically, but if you look at the changes, the growth of Oklahoma City and especially Tulsa, it's kind of interesting to see where Oklahoma will be in the next 100 years when it comes to at least to as you're talking locally.
And maybe we'll have had two or three NBA championships in that process.
And there's a lot in that building to inspire Oklahomans.
Sure.
I've been fortunate that I've spent almost my entire adult life in or around that building. And I've seen some of my best friends get married there. I've seen good friends and colleagues lie in state there after they've passed away. And, I've seen, giants who have, taken on causes that were much bigger than they were and did so in ways that have inspired me as somebody to be courageous and bold in what it is that I do. And I think that, if we can capture that, if we can look at, the things that have happened in that building that have been good, that are inspiring, that, that's something that can carry us into our next 100 years.
And I think that is a good point, that there are a great number of men and women who have come to that building and served with a high level of intensity and responsibility, and have made a real contribution. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that when we get frustrated with the lack of results. But we do have some very dedicated public servants, and they should be remembered in the context of what we're talking about right now.
Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.